left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Al Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, let's get it going this hour on Flames Talk. It is Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on a Wednesday, March 5th. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio on this Wednesday, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair. Wes from Post Media. But more importantly, back from Japan. Little direct flight to Narita. Little Tokyo excursion for a week.
Yeah.
Just the week halfway across the world.
You know.
It's about a 10.5 hour flight.
Yeah, about 9.5 on the way home.
Okay.
Yeah.
About the same as like Barcelona or Rome.
You been?
Tokyo? No.
Yeah. Cool place. Put it on your list.
It's very much on my list.
Yeah.
Welcome back. It's good to have you.
Thank you, buddy. I satisfied my sporting crave with a Japanese baseball game.
Yes. Is it as cool as they as it looks?
It was the first exhibition game. Okay, if you reached out to me from Japan and said I'm thinking about going to the Flames preseason opener, I'd say you're not really gonna get the same experience. But I asked sort of the same question the other way around, and people said, oh, yeah, they'll be chanting. I think there were about 40,000 fans there.
For a preseason game or an exhibition game?
The first exhibition game. Unbelievable. I'll show you some videos later.
Pretty cool. Much like that. That's cool. Well, it's good to have you back. Glad you're back safe and sound. 2 days, less than 2 days from the trade deadline. And we've got a fun exercise to get into this hour when it comes to the Flames and the trade deadline. Now, it feels like this could be a situation where they don't do much of anything at all, right? Like, I think the Flames would like to see if they can get Daniil Miramanov playing, whether or not they find a trade for him, or whether or not that's and a potential assignment to the Wranglers between now and the end of the regular season. I think they'd like to do that. I think they would like to make a couple of fringe additions if the prices aren't crazy. But generally, I think Craig Conroy and the Flames are pretty satisfied with the roster. And so if nothing happens, or if very little happens between now and Friday at 1 p.m. Calgary time, I don't think that this will be deemed as a failure of a trade deadline internally, because I think the general feel has been from the Flames over the last little bit that, you know, we made our big deal in late January. If something else comes along, we'll be ready. We'll be listening. We'll be, you know, very, very eager to pounce if something that makes sense for us is there. But if it's not, we're fine with that. I don't get the sense the Flames will be chasing on either side. I don't think that, you know, Craig Conroy is desperate to offload any of his pending UFAs. If Rooney and Hanley and Vladar and others go past the deadline and are pending UFAs and all walk, I think the Flames are fully prepared for that. So I don't think he's desperate to sell anybody at this point. Obviously, we know the case with the veterans and where the team is there. And I don't think he's desperate to chase anything on the other side. If a, you know, depth left side defenseman is going to cost too much, he feels confident with Kuznetsov and Solovyov and the depth they have. If a number four center with a right shot is way too expensive, then I think he's fine continuing with the fourth line rotation with Lomberg and Klapka and Rooney and maybe Pospisil and potential other options in the American League. So it doesn't feel like the Flames will be chasing come the deadline one way or the other.
Yeah, to me, Craig Conroy, and I don't say this in a negative way, but he's sort of stuck in a neutral position. And by that, I mean, yeah, would he love to add a couple guys at 24 or 25 years old who can be difference makers, not only in this wild card chase, but in the future? Yeah, of course he would. But are those the sort of deals that often get done on deadline day? No, they're not. And yet, I think he's also really hesitant, and this is sort of the former player in him as much as anything. Like, he'd be hesitant to subtract from this roster, right? He'd be hesitant to say, hey, you know, you guys have done a great job putting yourselves in the wild card race. You guys have done a great job of sitting in eighth place today, but, you know, I traded Joel Hanley because I couldn't pass up the fourth or the fifth round pick. You know, I traded this guy because, you know, the mid to low range asset I thought was more valuable. Like, I think if you're talking about trading guys just because they're the guys you should be trading at the lead up to the deadline, and I am curious what he decides to do with Joel Hanley, I think that's sending the wrong message to the group for not much return. It's different in Vancouver where they're talking about Brock Besser, and that can really make a difference long term. You know, what are you getting maybe for Kevin Rooney that you couldn't pass up? And if he's more valuable to you than he is in the future asset, maybe you keep him for that reason. And so for that, you know, that's a long-winded way of saying I don't expect this to be a really busy deadline for Craig Conroy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's okay.
That can't stop us from making up some trades, though, can it?
No, and that's why I say I want to get the text line involved at 960-960. And funny enough, as I think we all knew was going to happen, the Flames would be exactly where they were going into the road trip, coming out of the road trip. Nothing changed. They did that. The Flames will not fall out of the playoff race on this road trip. They will see, maybe could meaningfully open up a little bit of a gap depending what happens Thursday night in Dallas and Wednesday night with Vancouver. But at the very worst, when this road trip final game starts, they'll be in a playoff spot, and they'll be kind of at very worst when the trade deadline hits on Friday and Craig Conroy has to make all his decisions, that they'll be in striking distance of a playoff spot, which is exactly where they were when we started this road trip a little more than a week ago. So our fun exercise is this. Steinberg and Wes along with you. Wes and I are going to give you our... If we had our druthers and if we made the decisions, our big swing, our medium swing, you know, it's going for contact, get on base, and then our little bunt single. Big swing, medium swing, and little swing trade acquisitions. Now, did you do them as additions, or did you do them kind of any type of deal?
How do you mean?
Well, like, could it be like a player moved out for a fifth round draft pick? Would that count as a little swing?
I mostly did them as additions. At 2 out of 3 for sure as additions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mine are all additions.
Okay. I mean, I would characterize mine mostly as additions too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Big swing first. Do you want to go first or you want me to?
I could go first.
Okay. What do you got?
I'm calling the Buffalo Sabres. Is that who you're calling with your
also
big swing?
Also calling the Buffalo Sabres, yes.
So I'm asking about a left-shot defenseman. Who are you asking about?
Actually, I was asking about a left-shot defenseman as well. I wonder if it's the same guy.
Bowen Byram.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so our big swing, we did not do this, we did not confer on this before. So my big swing is also Bowen Byram because I think he's the guy that would be a pretty bona fide home run on this team's blue line.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm a little more confident in what Byram is than even what Dylan Cousins is. And I know how much they need a right shot center and a young center for this organization. And chasing Cousins, I still think, has plenty of merit. But the guy that I think I feel most comfortable with that would be an instant fit on this blue line, whether he's playing with Mackenzie Weegar or Rasmus Anderson or Zane Parekh or wherever you want to go, to me is Bowen Byram as well.
Yeah, to me, he's the perfect or potentially perfect complement for Mackenzie Weegar. He's a guy who can take care of both ends. He's a guy who has offensive instincts. He's a guy who can really skate. Like, it's not as if he's going to get caught out of position because he has bad wheels. He's 23 years old. And one of the concerns for the Buffalo Sabres is, well, A, that their team stinks and they need to change something, especially after last night's blowout loss at home to San Jose. But one of the concerns is what his next contract looks like as a restricted free agent. And for the Calgary Flames, with the stockpile of guys that they have on the other side of the blue line, on the right side, with Rasmus Anderson, whether he's just here for one more season or it's beyond that, with Mackenzie Weegar, with Zane Parekh and potentially Henry Muse in the future, no matter what your right side looks like, I think we've identified that you need help long-term on the left. And that is Bowen Byram. And the thing I like about him, you mentioned that, you know, maybe the jury's still out on Dylan Cousins. And whenever you're trading for a young player who's been in a bad program, you sort of wonder about the stench that might come with them. Like, has this guy grown accustomed to losing? What bad habits have maybe come with that? One of the appeals for me with Bowen Byram is that he won a Stanley Cup in Colorado. This is not a guy who has been losing in Buffalo for the past five seasons and has maybe, you know, is maybe going to take a while to be cultured out of that. This is a guy who's been around the biggest.
He's game. Not even a year into being in Buffalo for a calendar year. He was traded a year ago tomorrow on March 6th.
Yeah. And the reason that he's a swing that you can maybe take is it's going so sideways right now in Buffalo. They're about to, and I might have the exact number off, but they're about to miss the playoffs for like the 73rd straight season or something.
I think it's thereabouts. 14.
Yeah, maybe it's closer to 14, but you get the point. They are now basically a generation into playoff misses. They have
kids starting high school that have never seen a Sabres playoff game.
Like, they need to make a change there. And if you're Craig Conroy, and I'm sure he's talked to Buffalo multiple times, not just about Byron. I'm sure he kicked the tires pretty hard on Cousins as well. Maybe you can take advantage of that. Maybe you can be the team that can make that trade. And then if you have a chance at Bowen Byram, I'm willing to basically take back everything I said earlier about not taking guys off the roster. Like, this is one guy that I'm willing to move whatever sort of pieces it might take off my active roster. I'm willing to have that discussion because I think this could be an absolute cornerstone piece.
I would be doing Byram all day, every day as an acquisition for the Flames. He's at 3.85 right now. I'd be willing to give him an 8-year extension. I'd be willing to go in big money. I don't know what the Byram camp would be looking for, but if you could get him, like, I'd do 8x7 today if I'm the Flames for something like that. So, and you know, Craig Conroy's probably like, well, could you wait a little bit? Like, maybe let's not throw out $7 million immediately. But I think that the age range fits. He's not 24 until the summer. He is a bona fide top four defenseman in this league and has already established that. So it makes so much sense for a guy like that. If, and again, we don't even know if Buffalo is willing to move him. You know, I've heard from a few people that they're really happy with how well he's played with Rasmus Dahlin, that they may not even want to deal him. Buffalo doesn't feel like, all these guys are like, you know, we always lose on trades. Do we have to make one, or can we fix this another way? We shall see. But yeah, I like that Byron is both of our big swing. Okay. Medium swing.
You start on this one.
I've got another left shot defenseman.
Okay.
And I thought about this one because there's a lot, because I thought about doing Matias Samuelsson as a left shot defenseman out of Buffalo, but I'm like, you know, we just did Byram out of Buffalo, so that'd be a cop out.
Yeah, leave him a defenseman.
So I'm going to do left shot defenseman out of San Jose. I got a lot of appreciation for Mario Ferraro. I mean, he has played big minutes before, and while he's not what I think you would call a surefire, bona fide top four or even top pairing defense, I do think that he can play in a 3-5 role on a lot of teams in this league. And he is a left shot D-man who's got a ton of games under his belt and yet isn't what you would call old at this stage, especially for a defenseman. We're talking about a guy who is, I believe, 26 years old or 28 years old, 26 or 28. But we're talking about a guy who is 26 years old. Yeah. So he'll be 27 to start next season. I don't know. I think that he can skate decently well. He's got almost 400 NHL games under his belt. You're not going to get a ton of offense from him, but I think he could really help solidify things with Uyghur. I think he could really help solidify things behind Ball as your other top four left side defense. If you can't land a guy like Byram, a guy like Ferraro is not a bad second option to be looking at.
Yeah, I don't mind that at all. You take one look at his mugshot and how many teeth he doesn't have, and it'll give you a pretty good sense of the way I think he plays the game. Obviously, you don't love the way the minuses have piled up in the last few seasons in San Jose, but I would argue that's more an indication of how he's been used and how difficult it's been for that team. As he certainly doesn't appeal to me the way Bowen Byram does, but as a medium-sized cut, I don't dislike it, my friend.
Yep. Okay, what do you got?
I only characterize this as a medium swing because of how aggressively I want Craig Conroy to go after it. If I'm Craig Conroy, I want to be retaining the biggest chunk of salary that gets moved on deadline day, and I want the highest possible pick I can get as a thank you for that. I know we've heard talk for months about the Calgary Flames using their salary cap space. They're almost $18 million under the ceiling. We've heard tons of talk about them being willing to use that to be a broker. If I'm Craig Conroy, I'm going at that very aggressively in the next 36 hours. I am constantly calling the Vegas Golden Knights, who may or may not be aware that there's a salary cap, to tell them that I'm willing to retain salary for a good draft pick. I am constantly calling the Colorado Avalanche, who treat the NHL now like it's fantasy hockey, just making a trade for the sake of it every month or so. I'm constantly calling them to let them know that that's my medium swing. I want one of those picks that a contender is going to give up for retention. I want in on that. That's a way that I can further build, that I can add more meaningful draft capital without subtracting from my roster.
I don't mind that. I mean, and I think there's a lot of different ways they can use their copious amount of cap space mm-hmm. in a positive way and to help the group. And I think that's a good way of doing
it. If it's not retention, you can just take a player. Like you can take on a guy who's not fitting.
Exactly.
It doesn't use your retention slot, but it's basically retention anyways.
What do you got for your little swing?
Okay, let me preface this by saying that I don't know that this player is available, but I'm going to go a little bit off the board with my little swing. I want to see what the Washington Capitals plan to do with Ethan Frank. And for those who don't know who Ethan Frank is, he's a 27-year-old right winger. He's not the biggest guy. This is his first season in the National Hockey League. He was going sort of back and forth with Rory Karens for the AHL scoring lead earlier this year. I believe he's now played 20 games with the Capitals. But, you know, we can take from the Capitals essentially told us today when they put Jacob Vran on waivers for cap flexibility reasons, like they're looking to load up. They have an opportunity to really take advantage of this great chase that's turning into, they might win the President's Trophy. Like they're a legitimate cup contender. And I want to know what they're doing with Frank, because that's a guy that I can see getting bumped out of their lineup by an addition. He's not exempt for waivers. He's got to go on. And so I'm interested in getting to the front of the line on that one. He's a guy who scored 26 goals in his last year in the NCAA. He's scored 30 in the AHL. He's won the fastest skater competition at the AHL All-Star Game. Like, this guy's an absolute burner. And as you look to address your shortage of right wingers, that's a small swing that I'm willing to take. I want to know what their plan is for him.
My small swing, I don't know how small this is, but I like the idea of also getting a right shot center iceman. My guy's a little bit younger, and I've mentioned him before. I really like the idea of Ty Dellandrea out of San Jose. Now, the problem there. Yeah, go ahead.
Just let me interrupt you quick. Ethan Frank is very much a right winger. Right-handed shot, but not a center.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he would not be an option for them down the middle?
You might as well try anyone with a right-handed curve on their stick at the face-off dot, but he's not a middleman.
So mine would be Dellandrea, who is San Jose's current fourth-line center. You know, age range is in the mix at 24 right now. He'll be 25 this summer, but he's a right shot. He has been on good teams before. He's not going to give you a lot of offense. You're not, but I think he could be a real nice option for you if you could get him without giving up a whole lot. And I'd be willing to give up a little bit more for Dellandrea than I would other guys, because I think he can be with you as a depth option for a little while longer. He's under contract for next year. And I just, because of those things, I might be willing to give up a little bit more. I'm not giving up a ton, but I might be willing to give up a couple of assets. Like, I don't know, like, would you be willing to do a fourth round and a fifth round pick or something? And again, maybe that doesn't get it done for San Jose, but I like the player. I like the age. He's under contract at 1.3 next year. So he's a guy I'd be really looking at. And there's Luke Kunin, who is also a right shot center ice option in San Jose. But I like the age on Dellandrea better, and I like the fit with Dellandrea as Calgary's fourth center behind Backlund, Kadri, and Frost. And who knows, when Backlund, Kadri inevitably move on because they're both in their mid-30s, maybe Dellandrea is still here. Maybe he's not. But for the time being, for next season, I think you've got a nice option there as a right shot depth center. And so I would be looking at him between now and the deadline for sure.
And of those two options you mentioned, the two right-handed centers that San Jose might have on the block, he's the cheaper.
I would think so. Yeah.
I would think so too.
Only, I mean, he's their number four center. Kunin's kind of been their number three center. So yeah, I think he probably would be the cheaper one, but at the same time, as Frank Saravalli said to us many times, and many other people will say, yeah, okay, you want a right-handed shot center, so does everybody else.
Yeah.
And so as a result, I do think San Jose, other thing about Dellandrea, he's 51.8 in the dot this year and a right-handed guy. So now all of a sudden,
Kunin's numbers at the dot are, I think, in the 47 range.
47.3, yep.
Yeah.
So you bring in Dellandrea. Now you've got a reliable right shot face-off option. You bring in, you've already brought in Frost, and he's helped you as a left-handed shot. Michael Backlund's face-off numbers since the break have been much, much better. Feels like he's a little further past the injury that was hampering him. I still think he's dealing with it, but a little more comfortable playing through it. So now all of a sudden you bring in a guy that you can maybe use on the penalty kill. Maybe you can use in big face-off spots. Maybe you can use in defensive zone starts where maybe the Backlund-Coleman line needs a rest. So that's a guy that I would be looking at for sure.
Okay. As you said,
Dellandrea, by the way, averages about 59 seconds of penalty kill time per game in San Jose. So I think he could very easily fill the similar role that Rooney's filled or something like that.
Everybody wants a right shot center. Mm-hmm. Who does the text line want?
Wedley wants Kunin.
Okay.
Let's see what else we got here.
We giving Wedley a medium swing credit on that one?
Yeah, that's a medium swing. What about this gentleman? Does he count? I don't know off the top of my head if he counts as a right shot. No, that guy's a left shot center. Somebody suggested Parker Kelly in Colorado.
Okay.
In terms of centers, no names that are out there right now.
All right.
Somebody suggested going after Oleksiak.
Yeah, I've heard that one out there.
Somebody suggested Morgan Geeky in Boston. Go after him. It sounds like anybody in Boston could be had. Geeky is a right shot center, 26 years old. That's more of a medium swing, though. That's not your...
Yeah.
I mean, he would be a very nice acquisition.
You know, one of the guys I looked at in Boston as I was sort of mulling some options today was Calgary Hitmen alum Mark Kastelic.
That's another name that's come,
Come down the pipe. I know they've extended him already, so... Well, it does sound like you can have anything that's not tied down in Boston right now. And I am really fascinated by what they do with Brad Marchand on Friday. I have a hard time believing that Geeky is a guy they're selling off, and same with Kastelic, but you know, you could certainly make an argument. You only need one of those.
Yep. Pat and Wes, this hour of Flames Talk is underway wherever you get your podcast. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It is a Wednesday, March 5th on Flames Talk. It's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you. Wes is back with us after a hiatus in Japan. Welcome home.
Thank you.
How's the jet lag?
It is awful. If I nod off over here, don't take it personal.
I will.
Okay.
I will.
You know what? That works too.
It's Daily Flames roundtable time on this Wednesday for Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why minutes from the Calgary Airport. Derek Wills joins us to complete our Wednesday Daily Flames roundtable. And gents, with the 6-3 win in Philadelphia on Tuesday night, and with none of the teams the Flames are trying to hold off or the Flames are in the mix within this playoff race in action on Tuesday, the Flames gained ground on everybody. So it's 2-3 and a 4-point lead on Vancouver, St. Louis, and Utah, respectively, for that final playoff spot in the Western Conference. Final quarter of the season is now here. It's now underway, and it feels like a four-horse race for one spot, that final wild card spot in the Western Conference. We've asked this before, but now there's only a quarter of a season to go. Gents, who's the biggest threat to the Flames, who are in the driver's seat right now? Who's the biggest threat to the Flames for that wild card spot right now?
Are you guys ruling out third place in the Pacific Division?
Not ruling it out. It's 3 points. Kings have got two fewer games played, so not ruling it out. But for the sake of this conversation, we'll rule it out.
All right. Yeah, and there's that one head-to-head right at the end of the regular season, that game that was tacked on to the end of the schedule because of the wildfires in Southern California. So wouldn't it be cool if that game was a battle for the final playoff spot in the Pacific Division? But as far as the second wild card spot in the Western Conference goes, I still worry most about the Canucks. They've got a game in hand now, which they haven't had for a while, and they're 2 points back. The Flames would win the tiebreaker if the season ended today. So basically, I would say they're 2.5 points back. But the Canucks are the most talented of the groups that are behind the Flames, at least in my opinion. The Blues, I don't know, guys. They're just kind of a mad team for me, and I do give them credit. It looked like they had fallen out of the race, and all of a sudden, they're back in it, 3 points behind the Flames. They have played one more game, and I don't know. For me, the Utah Hockey Club, they're an interesting group. They've got some talent, but I don't love their team either, and they're 4 points back and have played the same number of games as the Flames. I still think the Canucks are the most talented of the teams behind the Flames and chasing them for that second wild card spot. But it does kind of feel like one of those seasons for the Canucks where things just aren't going to work, although there's still time to turn that around.
Yeah, it's the Canucks for me, guys. And I totally agree with what Derek just said in the sense that it does sort of feel like one of those seasons for the Canucks where, you know, at some point you have to, I guess, stop expecting things to take a turn. The reason that if I'm the Flames, they worry me the most is because they're the team in the rear view that I don't think has gotten close to playing to their potential. Now, you know, does Elias Pettersson figure it out and start producing before the end of this season? Is Quinn Hughes healthy enough to be the difference maker that we all know he can be? Do they choose to keep Brock Besser? Do they get Thatcher Demko back? Like, there are so many questions with that Canucks team, but the reason I think they're the most maybe frightening is they have the most talent for sure. Like, if they put it together, that is a team that is capable, especially with Quinn Hughes, of racking up victories pretty quickly. Are they going to put it together? It doesn't look that way, but they'd be the most worrisome to me for that reason. I got to be honest with you. I'd be more worried at this point, and maybe I'm crazy for saying this, but I'd be a little more worried at this point about the Anaheim Ducks than I would about St. Louis and Utah. Like, they've played their way right into this thing. They've got a couple of games coming up in short order with they play Vancouver tonight. They play St. Louis. They play Utah next week. Then they have two against Nashville. Like, this is a team that, as they start to piece some wins together, I think becomes a little more frightening because of the head-to-heads that they have coming up. I'm not sure that I think the Ducks can really become a factor, but they'd frighten me as much as those other two teams.
The Ducks are that team that it feels like might be that group that gets hot at the end of the season, misses by just a little bit, but does a really good job of inserting themselves into the playoff race and impacting it for the other teams, whether it's Calgary or Vancouver. They play Vancouver on Wednesday night on the second half of back-to-back. As you mentioned, they got St. Louis and Utah coming up. Like, it feels like the Ducks have got a really... I don't think that they've got it in them to go all the way past the four teams they'd need to leapfrog to be in and make up the points, but I do think they've got it in them to be a team that really impact, kind of like what Nashville was 2 years ago, guys. Remember, the Flames were trying to close the gap on the Jets, but Nashville wouldn't go away. Despite trading away a bunch of players, they stuck around. They eliminated the Flames in that weird shootout Nick Ritchie decision at the Dome, and they stayed around way longer than they should have, didn't make it, and actually ended up below the Flames in the standings when it was all said and done, but impacted things the rest of the way. Of the groups we're talking about, the Ducks have the best goaltending of the group. The Ducks have some of the best goaltending in the NHL this year. They're a top six team with a team save percentage of 905. So they've gotten really good goaltending from their tandem this year. Flames have gotten good goaltending. You know, I'll be different of the three that are kind of right there chasing the Flames. I'll be a little different because I don't know what Quinn Hughes' status is. I don't know if Brock Besser is going to be a member of the Canucks after the deadline. I don't know if other players are going to be dealt. Like, do Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin go pragmatic on us and say, yeah, you know what? This isn't our year. They see the same thing that we're talking about. Right. This is not our year. And as a result, we're going to be pragmatic, make a couple of moves that don't help us right now, but can help us in the big picture. Let's reconvene and come back stronger next year. See if they do something like that. So all those teams, for whatever reason, I don't buy St. Louis. I haven't bought St. Louis all year. They're just kind of there, and I know they've won four of their last five, but I'm going to go Utah because Utah's just been this stalking horse all year that they haven't really gone away. They haven't been able to surpass anybody, but they've got the potential to have really good goaltending. They have, I think, of the group kind of the most untapped high-end talent. I just wonder, of all those teams, I wonder if Utah has got it in them to go on a bit of a run and challenge the Flames the most. And the other reason why I think they might be the biggest threat, guys, is because of those teams, no more head-to-heads. I guess there's no more head-to-heads with St. Louis either, but I feel like Utah has they're the team that I just wonder about the most, even though they're number four of this group, and they sit 4 points back of the Flames.
Yeah, I mean, I actually quite like the Ducks, not necessarily for this season, but for two or three years down the road. They've got a lot of young talent there, and I do think they're trending in the right direction, but they're in a similar position to the one the Flames were in last year, kind of hanging around. But I think the Flames' biggest problem, maybe not this late in the season, but at some point last season, wasn't the number of points separating them from a playoff spot. It was the number of teams between them in that playoff spot. And I would say the same thing about the Ducks. As you pointed out, Pat, you got to climb over four teams. So it's less about the 6 points and more about the four teams for me. If they were right behind the Flames and 6 points back with those head-to-heads, then I think that becomes more reasonable for them. But it's still the Canucks for me. It doesn't feel like it's their year. And based on what I read on social media today, it does not sound like they're going to be buyers between now and the NHL's trade deadline. It sounds, based on what Jim Rutherford said, like they're just going to try to continue to build that team. And you know, I did like them bringing in Marcus Pettersson. He's a good defenseman. But ultimately, fellas, with the season that Elias Pettersson has had, they lost their second best player behind Quinn Hughes when they traded JT Miller to the Rangers. And they look a lot different without him. He, in a lot of ways, even though it seemed like he was a problem in the dressing room for at least one guy and probably more guys, was the heartbeat of that hockey team and the type of guy you want to come to the playoffs.
I think this is what is so fascinating, guys, about this conversation is we could circle back to this on Saturday or Monday and maybe have very different answers, right? Because we don't know what might be coming down the pipe at Friday's trade deadline.
Yeah.
Like, are the Canucks serious about shopping Brock Besser? You see the price that was paid, you know, for Yanni Gourde and Bjorkstrand today. And if you have a talented forward, you have to be thinking about shopping them. You know, that was a ransom that the Seattle Kraken got from the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah.
And it's going to make other teams think about putting guys in play. What do, you know, the St. Louis Blues, despite being just out of the wild card, are talking about potentially moving their captain in Braden Schenn? You know, can Utah and their starting goalie Vemelka get close enough on a contract extension that they're confident in keeping him? Maybe as a franchise that's trying to put down roots in that community and that state, maybe they wouldn't consider trading him anyways, but we could be having a very different conversation in less than 48 hours.
Yep. And we're now into the final quarter of the NHL season, and the Flames are in the driver's seat for a playoff spot with, 21 games to go? Can they drive it home? We will find out starting on Thursday night in Dallas. It's our Daily Flames Roundtable with Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, and Pat Steinberg. And so the Flames finally break out of their offensive doldrums on Tuesday night. They score 4 in the first period and 6 against the Flyers in a 6-3 win to pick up their second win on this 6-game road trip. So one more game to go on this trip, and part of that 6-goal outburst was 2 goals from Connor Zary, and he started that game playing with Ryan Lomberg and Kevin Rooney on the fourth line. He finished that game playing with Nazem Kadri and Jonathan Huberdeau on the first line. Matt Coronato was moved in game down to play with Lomberg and Rooney. Guys, where do you start Connor Zary in the road trip finale against the Stars? Like, if you're putting your lines together, where's Zary start in Thursday night's game?
Well, things changed so much during the course of last night's game. I actually thought that Zary finished on that fourth line again with Rooney and Lomberg, but it was hard to keep track of. But I don't know, guys. This is a really tough question
kind of
for me.
Flip-flopping, hey?
It was all over the place. It really was. And I thought I saw Coronato back with Kadri and Huberdeau at the end of that hockey game, but the game was out of hand, so I'm not even sure that if that was the case, that it actually means something. But it's tough for me because you're coming off of a very impressive 6-3 win in Philadelphia, 2 points you needed against a Flyers team that just upset the Jets a couple of nights earlier, and that was certainly fighting to keep themselves in the playoff race in last night's game. So that was a big win for the Flames to get back to 500 on this road trip. So, you know, generally coming off of that type of win, a coach wouldn't want to make many changes to his lineup. Guys, I wouldn't be surprised to see Ryan Huska start tomorrow's game here in Dallas against the Stars, the same way he started last night's game with Zary on the right side of the fourth line with Rooney and Lomberg, and Coronato on the right side of the first line with Kadri and Huberdeau, and then just go from there. and give guys an opportunity to move up and down the lineup based on performance. But I do get the sense, because I don't think he's been as impactful of late, that Coronado might be on a short leash as far as playing on that top line with Kadri and Huberto. So we'll have to wait and see. But and I thought they got a much better game from Sharon Govich after he was a healthy scratch for the first time in his 2 seasons as a member of the Flames. And I like the Backlund, Coleman, Farabee line better last night. I actually thought Farabee had some good chances to score against his former team. But remember when he blocked that shot earlier on the road trip? It doesn't look like he's got a lot on his shot right now. I'm wondering if maybe one of his hands is bugging him. I think it was his right hand that he took that shot off of. So I am wondering about that. But I don't know. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. The Flames scored 4 goals in the first 4 games of this season-long 6-game road trip and then exploded for 4 goals in the first period of last night's game and 6 in total. So I don't know. It worked the way they started and the way I think they finished last night. So I might start that way and then go from there tomorrow night.
The tricky part of the if it ain't broke, don't fix it is that I think we all noticed the lines rotated through enough that it's hard to figure out at what point it was fixed. Like Connor Zary scores his first of the night on a bump up shift with Kadri and Huberto. Then he scores his next one with Lomberg and Rooney. It looked to me like him and Coronado were sort of rotating back and forth almost, which is a sign that the coach didn't really want to demote either of them to the fourth line, certainly based on the way Zary was playing last night and just on more of an extended stretch from Coronado. You raise a good point, Wilsey, about Farabee and how much that hand is bugging him. Like, he didn't get much mustard on that shot on the first 2-on-1 he had last night, and then he looked to dish on the second one. Like you kind of got the feeling he was never going to shoot that. Made a good play to find Mackenzie Weegar, I believe it was, as the trailer. But I kind of wonder if Farabee's the guy who loses his spot in the top nine. And I say that because I think you have to leave Connor Zary with Huberto and Kadri. I think you want to see how that could look. And I don't think it's been so overwhelmingly positive with Coronado that you have to leave him there. And I wonder about putting Coronado in that case back on that Backlund and Coleman line. And I don't know that you want to move Farabee out of that spot because he is coming off a good game last night and you need him to start to develop some traction with his new team. But as I sort of shuffle the deck chairs around, that might be the best option for me. Zary on the top line, Coronado back with Backlund and Coleman, and Farabee, a guy that they've really made a concerted effort to get more involved in the penalty kill the past couple games. I think that's partially because Sharon Govich was out one night, but also partially because they want to find him some more ice time and make him feel like a bigger part of it. I think you do some things with him to make it feel like he's not necessarily always on the fourth line, but that might be the way I start in Dallas.
As long as, for me, I think as long as you can get Zary back into your top nine, whether you start, like whether they go through the morning skate lines in the first few shifts, Zary's with Rooney and Lomberg, if they want to do that, I guess that's fine. But I don't know. With no disrespect at all to Pospisil, I think the fourth line has been at its best with Pospisil there, with Rooney and with Lomberg. And you can keep Zary on the Kadri line, or you could put him on the Frost line. You could keep Coronado on the Kadri line, or put him on the Frost line. I do kind of wonder about Frost and Coronado on a line together. There's definitely some potential chemistry I think you could see form there between Frost and Coronado, which would be really interesting. And you know, maybe Matt hasn't been as impactful with Huberto and Kadri as the team was envisioning. So maybe there's a little bit of reason to juggle things up a little bit in that regard. But I think, you know, he scores 2 goals and he definitely got a big time monkey off of his back, especially the first one where he goes hard to the net, gets a nice redirect on the Braden Pahal shot and makes it 1-0. The second goal was, you know, I'm not sure if Wilsey or Wes or I let that goal in, but
I
you
do
know.
Sometimes fall forward, similar to what Ayrson was doing as he attempted to defend that.
But you know what? For a guy who needed the confidence, getting a second goal, you'll take it all day, every day. So I just have Zeri in the top nine. I'd probably, the only thing that I'd be pretty adamant about is moving Pospisil back to the Rooney line and having Zeri somewhere in your top nine, whether it's on the Huberdeau line, whether it's on the Frost line. And I would keep Willsey. I thought that was Farabee's best game, bar none, as a member of the Flames. Like, very clearly his best game as a member of the Flames. So I think I would keep Farabee with Backlund. I think there's a potential really good fit for him with Backlund and Coleman there.
Yeah, I mean, guys, I don't feel strongly about it. I mean, ultimately, Connor Zeri belongs in the top nine and probably in the top six on this team. But if they were to start him with Rooney and Lomberg tomorrow night, it wouldn't surprise me. But as I said yesterday, when everybody was all up in arms about him being on the right side of the fourth line at yesterday's morning skate, I said, hey, that's where he's going to start. That doesn't mean where he's going to finish. And I think he did finish there, but did play a good chunk of that game up on the top line with Kadri and Huberdeau. So for the sake of my mentions, I hope that he's in the top nine at tomorrow's morning skate at American Airlines Center. But you know, ultimately, I've got to give Ryan Huska a lot of credit. And as I told you guys, I actually binge-watched the chase during the Four Nations break. And I came away from that even more impressed than I already was with the Flames head coach and just how he handled different situations. And, you know, he made some ballsy decisions during this road trip, whether it be healthy scratching Yegor Sharangovich for the first time as a member of the Flames, healthy scratching Braden Pahal for the first time this season. I thought both guys responded really well in their first game back in the lineup last night, putting Connor Zeri on the right side of the fourth line to start last night's game. Like, he's made some decisions that he has taken some heat for, but you know, I think he's been right way more than wrong. And he really seems to have a good feel for how guys are going in games, and he's willing to promote them and give them a clean slate. And I really admire that about Ryan Huska. I think he's doing a really good job coaching this hockey team and getting the most out of his players. And that's why Flames are sitting in a Stanley Cup playoff spot with 21 games to go.
So, and the 21st or the first of those 21 games to go will be Thursday to wrap up this 6-game roadie in Dallas. Final game before the trade deadline. Maybe talk a little bit more deadline on Thursday's version of the round table. For now, though, have a great rest of your Wednesday. Thank you, Willsey.
Okay, guys, have a good night.
He is Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll start to wrap us up on the Daily Flames Roundtable. Cam Hughes, Taylor Dingman, our producers this hour, and the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport.